Okay, thank you very much for inviting me to give a talk here. I'll be sitting because I'm not feeling that well. Am I loud enough for people in the back? Yes? Okay, so this is joint work with Antal Balog from Budapest and with Chantal David from Montreal. And an outline of my talk is here. So basically I'll talk about some questions about primes in the context of elliptic curves. And I'll give a brief introduction. Then I'll state the main conjecture that I'll talk about. I'll talk about the history of this conjecture. And I'll state the main result. And I'll give an outline of the proof. And let me start with the twin prime conjecture, which I remind you says that claims that there are infinitely many primes P such that P plus 2 is also a prime. Oh. More precisely, or more generally, it states that for every even integer r, there are infinitely many primes p such that p plus r is also a prime. And this was made precise. Now, I don't know how to make this disappear. Okay. All right. How? Well, I guess if I don't put my hand there, it will vanish. Okay, so Hardy and Littlewood made this more precise by conjecturing that for every integer r, there is a precise constant, which we call the singular series of r, such that the number of primes p up to x, for which p plus r is a prime, is asymptotically equal to this constant times the function x divided by the square of natural log of x, as x goes to infinity. And the constant is 0 and r is odd. Okay, so now, well, this the twin prime conjecture is challenging enough, but you may want to ask, can you challenge yourself even further? And you can do that by concocting some generalizations of the Hardy and Littlewood conjecture. Using the heuristic, you can conjecture a similar formula for the number of primes p up to x, such that p minus 1 over 2 is a prime. And then you notice that p minus 1 over 2 is actually the order of some group. It's the order of fp star modulo the unit. So you may want to ask a more general question given a finite, say, abelian group, G, and a non-trivial normal subgroup, H. What is the likelihood that the quotient group is simple? And now, well, you may want to take a particular group, G, other than fp star. And the natural choice, for many reasons, is to take the group of points of an elliptic curve over a finite field. It's the first time I'm using this, so I don't know how to do it right. And this is exactly the content of Koblitz's conjecture from 1988. Koblitz was motivated by elliptic curve cryptography, where one wants to work with elliptic curves of a finite field such that the group of points has a large prime order, or has order divisible by a large prime. And you may ask, how do you get such curves? So one way is by taking an elliptic curve over the field of rational numbers with some good hypothesis, namely, it's not Q isogenous with a curve with trivial torsion. And then you can predict that there exists some constant depending on the elliptic curve such that the number of times p up to x for which the order of the reduction of the elliptic curve modulo this prime p is a prime number is asymptotically equal to the constant times the function x divided by log x squared. Well, this constant is given precisely. In particular, if the elliptic curve is without complex multiplication, it is roughly equal to some quantity depending strictly on the elliptic curve and this Euler product here. All right, so in the talk, I want to focus on Koblitz's conjecture, but before that, I want to say a few things about twin primes. So let me just give a brief summary of what is known about twin primes. In 1919, Vigor Brunn proved that surprising result that the summation over twin prime p such that 1 over p is also summation over twin prime p of 1 over p is finite. Okay, and he might have been disappointed. I don't know, who knows if he felt disappointed, because he was aiming to prove that this is infinite, so that he will have as a consequence that there are infinitely many twin primes. However, his method led to the birth of sieve theory, which in particular led to the birth of Selberg sieve, Large sieve, and results that we use all the time about primes in arithmetic progression, such as the Brunn-Titchmarsh theorem and the Bombier-Vinogradov theorem, and so on. And now, using all these tools, we can show very easily that we have the right order of magnitude as an upper bound for the number of twin primes up to x. And we can also show, thanks to work that culminated with Chen in 1966, that there are infinitely many times p, such that p plus 2 or p plus r is almost a prime, meaning the product of at most two primes. Other results are due to Meyer and Pomerantz and Antal-Balog regarding averages of twin primes, so results in the style of Bombier-Vinogradov or Barban-Halberstam-Davenport for twin primes in an arithmetic progression. And more recently, we have the results of Goldstone, Pintz, and Ildirim about small gaps between primes. Okay. Now, what I want to focus on is to say a few words about the analogy between Koblitz's conjecture and this twin prime conjecture. Okay, I'm assuming some familiarity with elliptic curves, only basic. But if you don't know anything, it's enough to know what Andrew Granville said this morning. So you take an elliptic curve over the field of rational numbers, so you have an equation y squared equal to a cubic, which is smooth. Then you reduce this modulo prime p, and you choose your prime such that the new curve, which will be a curve over fp, is again smooth. You have a group law, and then you can look at the order of this group, which you can write as p plus 1 minus some integer ap, which satisfies Haase's inequality that in absolute value is less than 2 root p. So Koblitz's conjecture is a question about how often p plus 1 minus a sub p is a prime. And you can proceed very naively. This is a prime even only if it's not divisible by any other prime L, which is the same thing as for twin primes. P plus 2 is a prime if and only if P is not congruent to negative 2 modulo L for any other prime L. And in fact, you can put this in a better context. For twin primes, what you have is something that has to do with the prime P behaving in this cyclotomic expansion. And for elliptic curves, what you have is a question about the prime p behaving in this L division field expansion, which is the next extension covering the cyclotomic field. Now, if the elliptic curve has complex multiplication by some imaginary quadratic field that we call k, and the prime p is such that a sub p is non-zero, then you have you can see the similarity with the twin prime conjecture even better by observing that the quantity p plus 1 minus ap is equal to pi p minus 1 times the complex conjugate of pi p minus 1, where this is a relation that lives in the imaginary quadratic field Q of pi p, which in this case does not depend on the prime p. It is exactly equal to the CM field K. So now it's as if we have a twin prime question for an imaginary quadratic field. So using these observations and using what has been done about twin primes, you can prove Brun-type results and upper bounds for the number of prime p such that p plus 1 minus 8 is also prime, and lower bounds for the number of primes p such as p plus 1 minus 8 p is almost a prime. And this almost has been improved in works of various authors. Now, the best that is known is due to Ivanich and Uros, which is which says that for the curve x y squared equal to x cubed minus x, there are infinitely many primes p such that p plus 1 minus 8p over 8 is the product of at most two primes. Now, if the curve that you start with has complex does not have complex multiplication, you need to assume the general sigma hypothesis. If the curve has complex multiplication, which is the case of the example treated by Ivanich and Uros, you don't need to assume the Riemann hypothesis. You can do everything unconditionally. Okay, any questions so far? So now I want to focus on an average version of Koblitz's conjecture. So this is the main result that I want to discuss. If we take any variable x that will go to infinity, and then two parameters of x, capital A and capital B, chosen such that they satisfy these conditions, then we consider a family of elliptic curves given in terms of this parameter, capital A and capital B. So we have equations of the form y squared equal to x cubed plus ax plus b, where little a and little b are in these boxes. Then, as x goes to infinity, 1 divided by the size of the family times the summation over all the curves in the family, and we sum primes p up to x, for which p plus 1 minus ap corresponding to your curve is a prime, is equal to what you expect it to be, some constant times the right function of x plus an error term. And the constant can be calculated precisely. Okay, so let me make a few remarks. Well, this is an average version of Koblitz's conjecture, and if you choose your parameters A and B appropriately, you can deduce using a normal order method that for most curves in your family, you have some Koblitz conjecture to be true. Then another point is that the size of this average is very small compared to the existing averages for other problems, due to Fulvi and Murti, David and Papalardi, Bayer and Banks and Sparlinski. And 3, the constant that we get is compatible with the constant that appears in Koblitz's conjecture, in the sense that if you take all those constants that appear for each elliptic curve and you average them over the family, you get the constant that we got in the main result here. And this is a result due to Nathan Jones. Okay, so now what I want to focus on is an outline of the proof, so to tell you the main steps in the proof of this average. Okay, so the basic step is to reduce the average to an average, the average of elliptic curves to an average of elliptic curves over finite fields. And this can be done in a standard way by, so you start with this expression here, and this sigma is the sum of elliptic curves over q, and then you have here a sum over primes p up to x, and you interchange summation, and you get a sum over primes p, and then sum over elliptic curves defined over finite fields. But you can do this in a more careful way, so that the error terms that appear in this asymptotic formula, which are in terms of your parameters A and B describing the family, are in fact small compared to the variable x. So I put here one line of how one could proceed. You interchange your summation in this way, and then you try to use classical techniques to estimate this summation over prime p up to x and summation over this little a and little b, so that the error terms that appear are smaller than the error terms that appear using the basic steps up here. And this uses ideas from, or method from, Banks and a recent paper by Banks and Spalinski, and leads to the family that I stated before. Capital A and capital B are greater than x to epsilon. However, the product, it has to be greater than x to 1 plus epsilon. So it's not that small. But it's better than what has been done before. And the ingredients used in making this small are some manipulations of character sums, the large sieve, and the fourth power moment of Dirichlet L functions due to Friedland and Ivanich. Okay, the second step, which is again standard, is to reduce the average that we got before, the average of elliptic curves over finite fields, to an average of Hurwitz class numbers. All right. So what is this pi upper star of p? It's the number of elliptic curves over finite field fp, the finite field fp, such that p plus 1 minus ap is a prime. And you can reduce this average here to this one, where capital H is a Hurwitz class number, and the way to proceed is by using a classical theorem of Doering that gives you the number of elliptic curves over a fixed finite field with a fixed trace of Frobenius, with a fixed A sub B. So everything here is classical. Then, the next step is to look at your average of Hurwitz class numbers and transform it into a different question. Now, we don't have anything that we forgot about elliptic curves. Everything is a question in classical number theory. Okay. And here is what we have. For lots of parameters depending on our variable little x, it turns out that summing over those Hurwitz class numbers leads to estimating an average of a twin prime problem, namely, okay, so we sum over twin primes p in a small interval with p in a congruence class, then here we sum over these residue classes, we sum over the moduli, and finally we sum over the gap between the twin primes. Okay, and to do this we use the Dirichlet class number formula, the Polyavinogradov inequality and some elementary estimates, quadratic reciprocity, and a weight change. And everything again is very classical here. So now the question is, how do you estimate that average over twin primes? So what you want to obtain is some result in the style of the Barban-Davenport-Halberstam theorem, where you average not only over primes in an arithmetic progression, but over twin primes in an arithmetic progression. And for that you need two, well, at least you need to start with a Ziegler-Wolfish type result. So twin primes in arithmetic progression, where the modulus is small compared to your variable x. And, okay, so this is the content of this step. Now, we start with lots of parameters here. Okay, so we have a range. which will be the range for our twin prime gap. We have a modulus, which you see is in the Ziegler-Wolfish style, so it's small compared to the variable x, and we have a residue class. And here is the interval where we'll have our prime p. And then you have the average. Any questions? Where the constant here is given explicitly in terms of the previous constant that appears in the twin prime conjecture. And to prove this, one uses ideas from a previous paper by Perelli and Pins, which dealt with a similar question but for the Goldbach problem. Now, using this, one can prove a result in the style of Bob and Davenport-Halberstam for twin primes on average, where we average over the gap and over the moduli. So let's see. Here are the primes P in an interval, there are twin primes, and then they are in a fixed residue class. We average over the residue class. Oh, this should be a Q, I guess. We average over the modulus, and then we average over the gap. And then this gives the size of the error term that should appear in the twin prime problem taken with a residue class, and then squared. So for this, we need, again, manipulations of character sums, the large sieve, the Ziegler-Wolfish average that we had before, and averages of this constant sigma of r and its square that were done before. Okay, then we plug everything back into the sum that we are interested in. And we obtain an asymptotic formula with some density, which I call delta, and some error term. And all this work, this Bob and Davenport-Halberstam results, are used to give an estimate, a good estimate for the error term that appears here. So then the next question that you have to treat is, what is the size of this density? And this is our last step. We want to study this density. And again, you see this has nothing to do with elliptic curves and has nothing to do with anything. It's just something about numbers. So we can show, if we take the first two sums here, we can simplify this and write it as being equal to some constant that depends on this little r plus an error term, which depends on some parameters that we chose before in terms of our x. And then we want to take the average of this constant here over our range. And we do this and we get precisely the constant that appears in the average theorem that we stated in the beginning. Okay, well, I'm even stating what this constant little cr is. A bunch of Euler products here. So the proof involves elementary calculations, but quite tedious. It takes about 7 printed pages, and it's based on some ideas from a paper by Gallagher, where he does the same thing for the constants that appear in the twin prime conjecture. Okay, and this ends the proof of the average result. And now I want to conclude with some question. Well, one natural question is if you can do better than this family, if you can improve the size of the family, or if you can concoct some large sieve method to work the way chain works. Say, if you take prime p up to x, you want to show that p plus 2 is almost a prime. And you instead of taking prime c out to x, you work with your family, and you like to show that a finite number of these elliptic curves satisfy the desired property. So I don't know how doable that is. One can do similar averages for other problems that appear in the context of reductions of an elliptic curve modulo primes. There are questions about the trace of the Frobenius, and that those have been treated by Fouvry and Murty, David and Pappalardi, Bayer, and recently by Banks and Szpilinski. But there are also other questions which have not been treated so far, such as the ones about Frobenius fields that appear when you talk about reductions of elliptic curves. And you can even move to other contexts, like abelian surfaces or dream field modules, and try to do the same thing. So I'll end here. Thank you.